It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 143 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
And we have decided to finally close out, I guess for now, our series on our top five threats from each of the X-Wing factions, closing out with the Rebel faction today.
Yeah, we're doing an episode I never thought I'd cast, but you know, never say never. Here we are.
Yeah, we facetiously said at the end of our last top five threats that we were waiting for five Rebel threats to appear, and now we've actually been seeing a lot of Rebel lists posting pretty well at some major events.
Right, the Rebels had a few finishes of big events. It was not enough to really know if that was a trend or an anomaly. But since then, we've seen them trend upwards, getting a decent amount of placing in big events, which has allowed us to identify better who the actual top five threats are.
So I think we should get into it and break it all down. So here are our top five Rebel threats. So of course, we're going to be talking about the extended format right now. There's a lot of buzz because we've got basically the official announcement of the hyperspace format, which is a new X-Wing format that's going to be used in future events. But for the time being, we're still operating all these major events on the extended format, which includes all of that expansion content and all that conversion kit content. So basically every card that's available in second edition right now is valid in this format.
Right, and our goal with this episode is to give Rebel players a good idea of what the best pilot options are within the Rebel faction. And for those non-Rebel players, you know, what Rebel ships are you going to be expecting to play against when you show up at your local kit night or at a bigger event?
Yeah, in fact, I think this episode might be more valuable to people who haven't played against a lot of these Rebel builds. I know that's been the case for me because in Minneapolis here, most of what I've played against are other Imperial lists or some Scum and Villainy lists. Usually when we see Rebels, just a handful of those lists show up at tournaments. So I think there's a lot of value in at least knowing what to expect and what the core strategies are going to be for people running these Rebel lists.
Yeah, and the Twin Cities is, you know, predominantly a Rebel meta, so if they're not even getting played that much there, that speaks to, you know, kind of what the first opinions were of the Rebel faction. But there haven't been any rule changes or points adjustments yet. But now we are seeing a lot more Rebel lists. And I think that's because once people have identified what the successful ships are, then more people have been able to find success with the Rebels.
And number five on our list holds an interesting position because this was a ship that at first did not seem like it was really meant for the competitive tier. Just the point costing and the way it was presented made it seem like more of a casual play ship, not quite competitively costed well enough. But thanks to some interesting card interactions and some maybe dubious rulings, we now see Dash Rendar showing up in some top cuts.
Yeah, and I'll maintain my stance that this ship should just be casual only. But if your, you know, single ship list gets to shoot twice, well, then it's, you know, functioning more like a very good two ship build. And, you know, while Dash is being used in technically a two ship build, the goal of it is kind of like the old Super Ghost builds, to have one very effective ship and then one little support ship that hides behind it.
Recently, we've seen Dash show up in the top cuts at both the PAX Unplugged System Open in Philadelphia and then also Australian Nationals.
Yeah, and here we're seeing basically the one core list for Dash because it's these combinations of upgrades and, of course, the Rorik pilot that makes this a strong force for the Rebels. Really, you could put any Outrider here, but Dash is the most popular one, because you do want to leverage a little bit of that I-5 mobility. But really, you're purchasing that 4-dice primary bowtie turret ship with access to the gunner slot.
Yeah, and basically what Dash Rendar does is Dash is able to shoot twice with those 4 dice from the same firing arc, which is not a normal thing we've seen in second edition. Other ships seem to be designed very much so that a ship can't shoot twice from the same arc at the same target in a single round. We see a lot of interaction with the gunner slot and other ship abilities that allow a ship to shoot multiple targets. But thanks to the Rebel Han gunner and the Rorik pilot in the Hawk 290, combined with a ruling about when the timing happens, allows Dash to shoot twice with four dice at the same ship.
Right. So Rorik Garnet grants Dash the ability, at the start of the engagement phase, you may choose one ship in your firing arc. If you do, it engages at initiative 7 instead of its normal initiative. So Dash gets to shoot once at initiative 7 through Rorik's boost there, and then also gets to activate the Han Gunner, who reads, during the engagement phase, at initiative 7, you may perform a turret attack. You cannot attack from that turret arc again this round.
And while it seems like the last line of the Han Gunner ability would prevent you from shooting twice from the same round, FFG's official ruling on this has been that you're able to engage and use Rorik to shoot your normal primary attack first, and then use Rebel Han Gunner to do that second shot, which obviously you'd still be activating the second part of that Han Gunner ability, but it wouldn't matter anymore because you've already fired the first time. Now, normally the way this works in a non-Rorik situation is you'd usually shoot with Rebel Han Gunner at initiative 7, and then when it comes to your normal activation in engagement, you would shoot out either a different turret arc, or if you don't have another turret arc, you wouldn't shoot out of any arc at all. But the fact that Rorik brings your ship up to engage at initiative 7 means that you're able to do that normal shot first and then follow that up with the Han Gunner shot.
Right, so this kind of feels like the old school combo wing that we had in first edition. And you can kind of respect them a little bit for following the rules as written, but I think these are pretty poorly written upgrade cards when you know that, you know, this is the faction that, you know, more than any other faction has shots at initiative 7. You know, both these two cards were designed at the same time. So you would think they'd be worded so that this didn't happen. But that's what happened, so we have to deal with this four attack dice primary ship that utilizes trick shot very well, also to bring that up to five attack dice that can be fired twice at initiative 7. And, you know, if you're triggering trick shot and you also have the Outrider title, the defender doesn't even get the defensive bonus for an obstructed attack. So that's just five dice, no defensive bonus there. And with Perceptive Copilot, you still have pretty good mods on both of your attacks. So that's pretty gross.
And that's what really makes this ship so powerful right now. You can basically set it up so you get 2 5-dice attacks with focus modification against a single ship in a single turn. That's going to be pretty overwhelming. And if you pull that off 2 turns in a row, you're basically going to erase most any ship off the board.
Well, and if you don't need to barrel roll or rotate your arc with Dash, then you can still use that coordinate from Rorik to take a target lock as well. So Dash is basically getting 2 actions a turn. You know, gets double mods with the Perceptive Copilot on the first action. And if you don't have to use your second action for reposition, then you also get a target lock. So quite a bit of modification. And 5 dice twice is pretty gross. But that's just the 5th best Rebel threat.
Yeah, we still got 4 more to go. This next one is a little bit surprising to me, but I think when you look at it overall and look at the stat line, it's just a really good value.
Right, and I think we have to admit, though, before we move on, that you know, the Dash threat might be better, but because it's so new, it really hasn't put up as many finishes as the rest of these ships. But moving on to 4th, is definitely a very resilient platform, and you know, while Dash is rolling a lot of attack dice, the trend you're going to see for the rest of these Rebel ships is they very efficiently roll 3 attack dice. So coming in at number 4, we have Nora Wexley in the Arc 170.
Nora Wexley has the pilot ability. While you defend, if there's an enemy ship at range 0 to 1, add 1 evade result to your dice results.
So that's a very good pilot ability. I mean, yeah, the Arcs only have 1 agility to start with, but when you pair those extra evade results up with the 9 hit points that the Arc 170s have, that is a lot to chew through.
Yeah, and that Nora ability is really interesting because you get to add the evade result regardless of what ship is shooting at you. So you get, as long as you have 1 enemy ship next to you, every enemy ship that shoots at you, you can add that evade result. And one thing that's really important in X-Wing 2nd Edition is that there are not a lot of abilities that actually add full results, like add an evade result or add a hit result. We see a few abilities that will change results, like the Fearless Talent, which lets you change a result into a hit result. But actually adding a result is one of the most powerful abilities you can have in X-Wing. We saw that in 1st Edition, and that remains true in 2nd Edition.
Right. I mean, and we're also seeing in 2nd Edition that just 3 attack dice with some decent mods does a lot of work. And when this ship gets to stay around for quite a while, doesn't need to spend any mods on defense, those 3 attack dice really get to add up over the course of the game. And, of course, you also do still have that rear arc where you can throw 2 attack dice if need be.
But I think when we get down to the core of it, what really makes Nork great is having that, you know, mildly modified 3 attack dice results, and this ship currently comes in at just 55 points. So it slots in really well in one of those 4-ship rebel lists that we've been seeing. And, you know, if you get enough value out of these rebel lists, even if the ships individually aren't, you know, overwhelming, that combination of just really good value and getting a lot of attack dice out there is going to give you the edge.
I think Nora speaks really well to what we've seen out of the successful rebel builds, where it is just filling it full of value. Nora alone is not going to win any fight, but when you combine it with all the other ships you can include in your list at that price point of 55 points and doesn't really need too many upgrades, you can really build a pretty solid list, including Nora.
All right, so our number 3 rebel threat pick here it's a little surprising. You know, a few months ago, I probably would have put this far higher up on the list, maybe down to 2 or even 1. But, you know, it's not appearing as much as some of these top lists that we're seeing, but Luke is still a very strong option.
Yeah, Luke Skywalker might be the single best rebel pilot, but at 62 points, he does eat up quite a bit of your list. And it's 62 points that does want, you know, another 10 points probably in supernatural reflexes. But what you're getting with Luke Skywalker is probably the best force user, particularly for using the force mechanics, because Luke Skywalker gets the most amount of force tokens through that pilot ability.
Yeah, even though he has a force value of 2, we've seen the higher force value of 3 on Vader. Luke's got some other things going for him that make him use those force charges, I think, more effectively than any other force user. Obviously, his pilot ability is amazing. Every time Luke is the target of an attack, he gains a force charge back. So basically, you can spend your force charges, you know, willy-nilly, knowing that you're going to get them back every time you get targeted. That's one limitation I've seen flying other ships with force charges, like the Inquisitor or even Darth Vader, where you can find yourself really quickly spending those force charges, and then if you're only getting them back 1 per turn, you might not have them when you actually need them.
Right, and that allows you to use those force charges on offense, or you use them for those force upgrade cards like supernatural reflexes. I mean, Luke's pretty unique here. With most force users, we see their pilot ability give them some other way to spend force charges, but Luke is unique in that his gives him a very good way to regenerate those force charges. And force charges are, you know, pretty strong. You know, having access to that focus modification frees up your other actions. You can boost and target lock and still have pretty good, you know, attack or defense mods. And you know Luke will definitely have them for defense.
And I think that's a big part of it. Luke is one of the few ships in the game that's really resilient to a heavy weight of shots. He still can, you know, if you're firing several proton torpedoes at him, he's going to take some damage. But if you're just getting a volley of several, you know, 2 or 3 dice shots, Luke is one of your best options there for defense, because every time he gets targeted, he gets that force charge back. He pretty much always has defensive modifications, so he's going to be able to evade at least some, if not all, of those incoming smaller shots.
Right. I mean, we've seen a lot of 2 attack dice ships be pretty successful here in 2nd edition, just because most defenders don't have that good of a bank of defensive modifications. But Luke here is that exception. He's always going to have those defensive modifications. Plus, he's in an X-Wing, which has access to barrel roll and also boost through the servo motor S-foils. So he's got pretty good repositioning options. And having access to both those actions makes him a very good supernatural reflexes pilot, where, you know, Darth Vader, if he has to boost through supernatural reflexes, that's going to be a pretty costly action, because he's going to take a damage for it because he doesn't have access to boost. But Luke has access to both of those repositioning actions. So while he's at I-5, still perhaps the best supernatural reflexes pilot.
All right, so those first three picks on our list, all strong choices, all have their own value. I think when we get down to the bottom two here, we're really looking at what I think Rebels bring to the competitive game now more than any other faction, is that they bring this incredible value. So you're getting, whether it's attack dice or abilities, for the amount of points you're paying, you get a really great value, even if, you know, the ship itself isn't that impressive stat-wise.
Well, I mean, as far as stats are concerned, you know, having three attack dice is a very good stat to have, especially on the Rebel faction, where they can just fit so many three attack dice ships in a list. And our number two slot is no exception here. Actually, quite an enabler for the rest of your list. And, you know, can be quite an all-star herself.
We are, of course, talking about Sabine Wren in the attack shuttle. And, you know, this ship has seen some changes going from first edition into second edition. It lost one of its shields in favor of more hull, so it's a little more susceptible to critical damage. But the value you get out of Sabine is pretty crazy. I got to see it firsthand a couple times now in the local metagame, and this is a ship that surprises me every time.
Right. Well, I mean, we were just talking about supernatural reflexes, and Sabine Wren has that ability kind of built in without any force charges. So she has the ability, before you activate, you may perform a barrel roll or boost action. What's interesting about this is, well, first, the attack shuttle has a barrel roll that can link into a red evade. So at a base level, you could do the barrel roll and then take that red evade action and then execute one of your four blue maneuvers, clear that, and still pick up a focus action. So while you only have four hit points, having access to focus and evade makes this pretty resilient for how cheap it is.
And that puts Sabine in a very elite club right now of one of the few ships that can get focus and evade on the same turn relatively easily. So even though the attack shuttle's not a crazy impressive platform, you know, just four hit points to agility dice, the fact that you can get three attack dice and then still get focus and evade makes the ship pretty sturdy and pretty threatening.
Yeah, I mean, you're pretty resilient, but also that's a really good repositioning action. Having that booster barrel roll before you activate is a very powerful ability, and one that skilled players can take full advantage of. It means you really do have to think very carefully about what maneuver you set, so that you can react to multiple maneuvers that your opponent executes. But if you're playing Sabine right, you know, she will very rarely end up in a spot that is very dangerous for her.
Yeah, and Sabine comes in at just 38 points currently, so it's a really crazy good value for the effectiveness you're getting out of her. And she does have access to the talent slot there, too, so you have some great options, whether you're going maybe the juke route because you're going to be getting those evade tokens, or if you go even debris gambit to turn that red evade into a white evade so that you don't even need to depend on your blue maneuvers. You can get that focus evade whenever you're close to an obstacle.
Right, I think both those talents are a very solid choice for Sabine. You know, juke giving you that extra damage boost because you're gonna often have access to that evade token, or debris gambit to really, you know, take advantage of getting full defensive mods and having very good maneuvers you can set on your dial as well. I do like the ability to, you know, use that barrel roll, link it into a white evade through debris gambit, and then execute a K-turn. I think that's a pretty powerful interaction you can do for just 40 points, so that's pretty exciting for me.
Yeah, I think overall, I think the reason a lot of Rebel players are taking Sabine is that she just really fits into a lot of different lists at such a low point cost, because she's so great on her own. She doesn't depend on having other ships in your list to get the value out of her. And then you can just pair her up with whatever else you need to fill in, you know, that small 40-point gap you have in your list.
All right, before we get to our number one Rebel threat, we have a few honorable mentions to get to.
Yeah, we did this in the last two top five threat episodes, and this is a thing where we bring up ships that almost made our top five list or could have if they just performed a little bit better. But these are ships that are approaching maybe that threshold of falling into that four or five slot, and they just haven't quite made their way yet there. But we could see them come up in the near future, so we like to bring them up at least so you're aware of them.
I think for me, the Rebel ship that was closest to making the top five cut here was Lieutenant Blount. This ship is amazing, and I think one of the best reasons to play Rebels, for all the same reasons that Sabine is a very affordable three attack dice ship that you can easily fit into your list. Well, Lieutenant Blount does a lot of the same things, at even cheaper. You'd have to work a little harder to get that extra attack dice.
Yeah, coming in at just 30 points right now. Lieutenant Blount has the ability, while you perform a primary attack, if there is at least one other friendly ship at range 0 to 1 of the defender, you may roll one additional attack die.
Right, you know, and when a Z-95 shows up to range 1 and rolls 4 attack dice because one of its buddies is also getting a range 1 shot that turn, that's something to take notice of.
That seems like a 30 points well spent.
Another thing we include here on our honorable mentions is a group of ships that we were kind of surprised to see recently doing well. And I don't think they're maybe quite as close as Lieutenant Blount was to making the list, but definitely seeing a recent trend here of B-Wings being successful.
Yes, and this is a case where I'm very excited about it, and I'm not sure why it's happening. We've seen both Ten Num and Braylon Strom do pretty well. They appeared in two of the top cut Rebel lists at the recent PAX Unplugged, System Open in Philadelphia, and I haven't seen them in play enough to know exactly why they're suddenly showing up here, but I'm actually really excited to do some field research with these ships and kind of experiment around to see maybe if I can figure out why they're performing so well.
I mean, this is surprising for me because we'd really written this ship off as, why would you take this over an X-Wing? You know, what is it really doing differently? And it's costing a few more points while it's at it.
But regardless of why it's happening, I'm just excited to see B-Wings out on the table, and I'm looking forward to putting some out there myself.
Absolutely. I might need to put my upside-down B-Wings back on the table again. Those always look really good on the table. All right, moving on to our number one Rebel threat. Definitely a pilot that we've all always wanted to be good for quite a long time, and you know, now with second edition, he's definitely at that spot.
Yeah, this is an interesting case where this pilot was in first edition had pretty much the exact same pilot ability, and it was always one of those ships, a fan favorite character that we wanted to see do better in X-Wing, seemed like your quintessential X-Wing pilot, but never quite made it in first edition, which is why I'm actually really excited that he's doing well in second edition finally.
And our number one threat for the Rebellion is Wedge Antilles, the Initiative 6 X-Wing pilot, survivor of 2 Death Star battles, and really everyone's favorite character from the original trilogy.
Well, that's a dubious claim, but what's not a dubious claim is that Wedge is really the best value you can get out of the Rebels right now. The T-65 X-Wing chassis on its own is a really powerful platform. You've got 6 hit points, you've got some great repositioning options thanks to servo motor S-foils, and you've got that 3 attack dice, 2 agility value. This has become kind of the baseline ship for X-Wing 2nd Edition. And Wedge really highlights that value. At just 52 points, you're getting an Initiative 6 pilot with a really strong offensive ability, and this just fits in so well with the X-Wing metagame right now.
Right. Well, I mean, those 52 points, that's 10 points cheaper than Luke Skywalker, and you have better initiative. So really your go-to choice for an X-Wing pilot here. I think, you know, Wedge overall, very good ship, you know, strong initiative, good pilot ability, but he excels even more because of how well he responds to the current competitive environment. You know, of course, that Initiative 6 lets him reposition above all of the prevalent Initiative 5 ships, but even more so, his pilot ability, you know, while you perform an attack, the defender rolls one fewer defense die. Well, that works very well against these very common 2 agility ships that have a bunch of defensive modifications. You know, ships like Whisper and Boba Fett, where when you take them from 2 agility down to 1, suddenly, you know, those evade tokens or defensive rerolls don't matter as much. And Wedge is able to put some serious hurt on those ships.
And I think that Initiative 6 is a really huge factor here. I think it kind of parallels what we see with Soonterfell over in the Imperial faction, where having that Initiative 6 is so important to deal with all these really strong Initiative 5 repositioners, like you're mentioning, Whisper and Boba. And that's especially important in the Rebel faction, where you're not necessarily going to be able to afford a strong bid if you have a good Initiative 5 ship like Luke Skywalker. You might not be able to win that bid against other, you know, really low-bidding Imperial or Scum lists. Whereas if you just go up to Initiative 6, that's going to set you up to move after a lot of those I-5 ships, regardless of who has first player.
Now, Wedge isn't without his flaws. I mean, he still just has 2 green dice with not too much defensive modification. Definitely can be shot himself, but, you know, you are moving at Initiative 6 and have good repositioning options. So hopefully you can dodge most bad positions to put him in. And, you know, with that pilot ability and, you know, activating early in the engagement phase. I think Wedge's best defense is just a very strong offense. Wedge excels at removing pieces from the game. And if they're not there to shoot back at Wedge, I think that's how really how Wedge finds success on the table.
Well, I think Wedge, even compared to Luke Skywalker, you're getting a lot of value out of Wedge for that 52 points, where that's only taking up about a quarter of your list, and you don't even need to put any upgrade cards on Wedge outside of the free Servo Motor S foils. You can get a really effective Wedge for just that 52 points base cost, whereas if you're going to go the Luke Skywalker route, there's going to be a lot of temptation to start loading Luke out with Proton Torpedoes or Supernatural Reflexes, or regen cards, where you're going to start seeing that Luke start to skyrocket up in points into the, you know, 70, 80 range. Whereas Wedge, just at 52 points, is a lot of value, and he might last you a long time, since he's not necessarily going to be the biggest priority in your opponent's strategy.
Absolutely. He's also great at setting off chains of Initiative 6 torpedo strikes we've also seen at the Rebels, where, you know, if you include some lists utilizing swarm tactics, you can spread that Initiative 6 around through all of your ships and set off a pretty devastating Alpha Strike. Just don't go up against any dashes shooting you at Initiative 7.
All right, so there you have it, our top 5 Rebel threats. We are really interested to hear if you guys would agree with this list, or if you'd move things around or add other ships, take other ships away. Please let us know. You can go onto our Facebook page. You can find the link for this episode. Throw a comment there saying what Rebel ship you think should be in this list and which one we should take off. Or you can tweet at us at Radio TCX Podcast.
Yeah, and thank you to all the players who put in the tough work to give everyone else the confidence to try out Rebels. It's good to be back to a 3-faction game.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/RadioTCX and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy the show, please go on to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the podcast and why others would be interested in listening.
And if you want to support the show directly, please consider going on to patreon.com/RadioTCX and becoming a supporter of the show today. It really means a lot to us.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week.